Hello and welcome to Build Momentum, a show where we explore thought leadership and education. I'm Sarah Williamson, the founder of SWPR Group.
And I'm Katie Lash, the director of the East Central Educational Service Center.
Together, we explore how to leverage key partners, your constituencies, and the media to authentically impact your organizations and the leaders who champion them. We can't wait to get started, so let's dive into today's show. Kevin Hogan and Carl Hooker, it's so fun to have you on the show with us today. Thank you so much for joining Build Momentum with Katie.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I think there's so much influence in this room right now. It's pretty exciting. Carl and Kevin, the combo, and then Katie. Man, I feel like we've arrived on Build Momentum. This is a real show now.
Or this could be your last show, you know, with us as your guests. You never know.
This could be my last show. I have to tell you something. Rod Berger called me the other day and he said, Sarah, so you have a real show now? And I was like, what are you talking about? I've had a podcast for 2.5 years. It's like, no, you're real now. It's actually legitimate. And maybe I'll look at you as a competition. I'm like, wow. You were even on my other show, if you don't recall.
Yeah.
So apparently we're legit now. Okay.
I'm excited because when we were at ASU GSV, we were trying to get ourselves onto their show, but instead they came to ours, Sarah.
I know. That's so true. Well, hopefully this will encourage them to invite us on their shows. Right? Right, guys?
Absolutely. It can't hurt. Well, that's for sure.
Wait a minute. I thought this was the Road to the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl podcast.
Yes.
So what you
go, Birds.
So funny. Okay. All right. So we have a lot to talk about today. First, I want to get updates on what you guys are working on. You are so busy. I constantly see amazing things on the socials. And I also want to dig into some thought leadership, because that's what the show's about, because you guys are both masterful at building your own audiences, growing your platforms, and just sharing with the world what's going on. So Kevin, will you start us off and tell us about your new podcast and Substack and everything you're working on?
Sure. Yeah. So very busy working as editor at large for eSchool News. I do two different podcasts for them. One is Innovations in Education, and it focuses on K-12. I do that weekly. And I have an Innovations in Education for Higher Ed, which goes out once a month. So basically, just as the title suggests, I go through and I look at the various pieces of content that eSchool News is posting up to their two sites. I pick out the highlights. I kind of try to pick out some trends, very much what I've always done, you know, and you know, three pieces of content that are kind of similar, equal trends. And we'll talk about that. I'll take excerpts from the pieces and put them out there. And also sometimes try to interview the writers of the pieces as well as the subjects of the pieces. So basically, it's just what I always just love to do is talk about the latest and greatest in ed tech in K-12. So that keeps me very busy, as well as my Substack. It's called The Hogan Report. Basically the same thing, except I do a lot more writing on there. And also there's much more of a focus on the B2B aspects of ed tech, right? So the eSchool News stuff focuses on, I would say, themes of professional development for educators and specifically education leaders, right? Looking at strategies, looking at post-pandemic strategies on how to kind of integrate the best innovations that came about during the past 2 years into the day-to-day business of schools. The Hogan Report is more of a traditional business-to-business newsletter. So if you're old enough to remember Nelson Heller and the Heller Report, I wouldn't say ripped them off, but it sounds very similar. In terms of the title, and where you just go and say, you know, company A is just bought company B. And what does it mean? I just had a great conversation with Hardeep Gupta, who's the CEO of PowerSchool, talking about some of their latest and greatest releases. They had probably, I would say, one of the first truly valuable data sets in terms of the survey of their customers coming out of the pandemic and what districts have retained and basically what is the state of play in ed tech coming off of their data. So again, it is just what I like to do is like talk and write about what is happening in the world of ed tech. So, and as you asked, I use a platform called Substack. Been using it since about January. It's been around a while. I was a Substack reader. It came to me from a number of different reporters. Matt Taibbi, who used to be at Rolling Stone, is a politics writer, left Rolling Stone, started his own Substack. A number of different journalists have kind of left traditional publications to go and start their own thing. And specifically, when you get into kind of niche B2B sort of topics, I think you see that more and more. So people like don't necessarily say read Bloomberg because they're interested in their entire coverage of microchips in automobiles. They read it because that particular reporter knows everything there needs to be known about that thing.
Yeah. Right?
And I found it to be intriguing. It's a really easy, it's WordPress. It has audio and video components that are also into it. It's so brain dead easy, even I can use it. It's also another element where they handle your email list for you. You own the list, but they manage the list.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And there's also a level where you can list subscribers. And then they handle the financing, which is also something else, which, you know, as a content producer, you don't want to do, right? I mean, you want someone else to handle that. And then they take 10% of whatever your subscription revenue is. So the idea is there, and I'm finding it's slow and steady wins the race. But, you know, as you begin to build that list, it seems like a pretty good way to generate revenue as well as content. So that's what Substack is.
That's great. So it's helpful for companies and marketing people to think about those people like you, Kevin, who are on Substack, sharing ideas with them. It's a very interesting channel to communicate and get their message out. So keep that in mind, folks, when you're thinking about reaching out to people. Awesome.
And you can subscribe.
Yeah, subscribe to.
Yeah, and you can subscribe and you could,
THR.
And pay him.
Go to the THR. I just saw that the top 10 writers on Substack generate $20 million in the last year in annual revenue.
Dang, Carl.
So where are you, number 11?
Yeah, I'm like 13, 14. Is there a bottom of that list, Carl?
You're right above the bottom. I mean, you're doing okay.
It's so interesting how media has changed, though. I love that the new landscape that's coming out. So that's fascinating. Carl, what's cooking with you? I know you have a book. Thank you for your book, by the way. I'm reading it. I love it. And yeah.
I'm excited to hear about this. I'm so excited.
Okay. How is Ready, Set, Fail doing? This is Carl's book.
This is good. This is my seventh book. So you talk about traditional publishing and kind of non-traditional publishing, just like Kevin was talking about with the space of when it comes to writing and journalism. This book, the other books I wrote through a publisher, ISTE, you probably heard of them, pretty big publishing press. They do all their stuff.
No.
Totally really? Different. Yeah. ISTE, let me spell it out. It's a completely different model because they're more of a traditional publisher. I'm doing this with X Factor EDU and Matt Joseph's outfit. He's got lots of great authors now that he's lined up, and it's print to publish through Amazon. So honestly, the first book, when I first put it out on the market in January, there was like my dad, who's a proofreader, found like 82 errors in it. I went back. That was after my editor got through it. Went back and I changed it. What's great is because it's non-traditional, quick, right after that, anybody who purchased after that date got the edited version. So there's a few copies lingering of those will be worth millions of dollars on Substack at some point.
It's like the upside down airplane on the stamp, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's the Honus Wagner rookie card that's off center. Yeah. So the book's been going great. Yeah. So sales, and to work with a smaller kind of a lean publisher, I would say a big advantage of that is you get a lot more insight into the sales, the marketing revenue. There's also, I feel like, a lot more support because they are an up and coming house in terms of publishing house. So it's the process itself has been so clean and lean. I've just enjoyed every step of the way of it. So yeah, for me, getting the story out there was great and not having to necessarily have to align it to, let's say, a particular standard from a company. I'm not going to say which company, but sometimes they want their standards and everything. And with Ready, Set, Fail, I mean, there's ways I could do that. But to be honest, it would muddle the story and muddle the purpose of the book.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. So I was going to ask you, what do you think about self-publishing work versus using a publishing house?
Are you an education leader, the leader of an ed tech company, or a member of an organization supporting education? We continue to hear from leaders like you who have a story to tell, a message to share, or an important initiative that needs greater awareness. 3 years ago, that's exactly what we heard from Doug Roberts, the CEO of the Institute for Education Innovation, when he approached SWPR Group. This led to the launch of a groundbreaking new award that was unlike any other in EdTech. The SWPS Choice Awards, judged exclusively by K-12 superintendents, set IEI on a path to market dominance, increasing vendor partners and superintendent members by more than 30% year over year. Jamie Candy, the CEO of Edmentum, shared with SWPR Group the EdTech company's desire to tell district success stories and to elevate the leaders behind their organization in a more thoughtful and strategic way. Throughout the past 2 years, SWPR Group has established consistent and regular media coverage, authored compelling op-eds, and secured interviews highlighting success stories while also inserting Edmentum into timely topics like AI with national reporters. At SWPR Group, we provide public relations, communication strategies, and thought leadership support for today's changemakers and the brands they champion. We work together with our clients to bring their mission to life by consistently delivering high-quality content, creative communication strategies, and transformational results. What story do you want to tell? Reach out to us using the link in the show notes or visit our website at swpr-group.com.
Well, now that I've seen it, I think there's definitely, and I almost went that route too, like Fast Pencil or a couple of the other tools you can use out there. Now that I've seen how it works, I think it's definitely doable. I personally, I've written 7 books, but I'll tell you what, and I write blogs all the time. Like Kevin, I'm a writer. However, I need an editor. I would have to outsource that. I had Christine on this last one. She was my editor and she was great about, she may have missed some of the proofreading things like my dad picked up on, but what she was great about was saying like, I don't know that your audience understands that you're assuming a lot by this phrase, or maybe this should go ahead of this paragraph. And it flowed so much better, man. She makes me sound so good. So again, I can write all day, but I need editors to help clean it up. And if you read any of my blogs, which are not edited, you can see that sometimes I kind of go off down tangents and I have to pull myself back in. So as much as I think it is possible and doable, you'd have to have some sort of editor in the process too. And then to have a marketing group, like you, Sarah, someone behind that can help run it, help really push that out there. I think that also helps because it's not just you doing the public. I mean, you have other people actually going out there and doing the work for you, trying to get people to buy your book. So for me, it's worth it. And the cut rate on the smaller publishing house is so much better. If you've ever been an author of a book, you probably know what I'm talking about. It's, you don't get a lot. You don't make a lot of money selling books. I'll just say that. But with these newer, leaner houses.
No.
Yeah, I know. You get a bigger cut. You get a much bigger cut on the smaller houses because again, it's not traditional. You don't need a warehouse to store thousands of books and then deliver them. You know, it's the second they hit.
A store case.
I know.
Yeah.
But it's funny that we still, I mean, that's still what people gravitate towards. And I understand that. And that's what I did at the beginning. So
yeah,
I mean, self-publishing is definitely doable, but with an author and with a team, with marketing team would be great.
I'll concur with the editor. I actually have the luxury of having one built in here at the house. My wife is a brilliant copy editor. So she rakes through all my stuff. I mean, you can use the automated editing, right?
Grammarly. Through, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it catches a lot of stuff. I don't know. I get so many more dashes in my writing now since I've used Grammarly, right? It just seems like every other thing's like, they want to put a dash in everything. But yeah, you know, you can't get the niceties. You can't get the intangibles of writing. And just as you said, I think I know the Christine you're talking about. Like she can, another human can just help you find those holes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next Hogan report, the THR is going to have hyphens in it now. T-H-R.
I never remember how to make that dash, like the M dash, the E-M dash. I always forget how to do it. And then I'm doing like 2 hyphens next to each other. It never looks right.
The skill set.
Okay. Skill set. Yep. Working on it. So that's interesting because we have an amazing book editor and we have amazing writers on our team and we've just been self-publishing and I thought, gosh, you know, should we, but it sounds like we have the recipe. We have the recipe for success. We just need it more. It's literally like grassroots for books. It's a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
It's a lot of work. So more of that.
And to be fair, I'll add that also, like I've been doing a talk around this topic for several years. So like honing all of the different parts of my different talks and going out and speaking about it and then tying it into an actual book topic now, I have to be careful because I've seen people, and I won't mention any names, that'll go up and say, oh, and by the way, if you read page 34 of my book, I'll tell you the story, like on their slide. I don't want to do that. Instead, I'm like, here, I'll give you all this bits for free. I'll let you listen to some of the stories. And Sir Ken Robinson was really great. And whenever I got to meet with him and actually see him speak, like it was coming right off the page. Like he literally pretty much was saying the stories that were in his books. But I didn't care because I loved every bit of it. And I was like, oh, I got a snippet of this chapter and a snippet of that. Let me go out and buy the book. And so he was really artful of that when he was around speaking before he passed away a couple of years ago. But for me, I think that's kind of what I'm doing now. So I'm trying to tie that moment in. And then it's, of course, you know, the art of the upsell. Like, how do you, hey, you're bringing me in anyway. Why don't you grab a few copies, you know, give to your leadership, or I'll bring a few too and just hand them out. I'm a terrible salesman in that sense. I'm always like, here's some free, you know. I just figured out the credit card machine thing where I can do it with my phone. So I did sell some books recently at an event. They said, you can set up and sell them. And that was great. But then carrying 30, 100 books in a suitcase does not make a lot of sense. So I'm all for
that. That is the hard part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a few freebies or buy it on Amazon, whatever you're ready.
You know, what's kind of great is one strategy we're using with our book is, okay, we'll get a speaking gig for Quentin at a conference and then we'll invite people to sponsor his session and then they pay for the books. So a limited number of books to sponsor, 50 to 100 books, and then they can help us ship them to the location.
That's awesome.
And usually the books show up. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah. That's a whole nother thing.
That's a whole nother thing.
I'm doing an event in Virginia, I think, in October. 350 staff. They bought a book for every staff member before I get there.
That's so awesome.
Which is awesome. So, I mean, it's extra revenue, but it's also nice because then they can refer to, if they want to dig in deeper into the stories, I mean, I'll give them highlights, of course, but they have it right there in front of them.
Yeah. We're also looking at author series with companies where they buy so many books, then Quentin will join them for a talk. So it sounds like we're doing the right things. We just need to do more of it. Any other advice, Carl?
I mean,
you're a pro with this.
Giving away pieces of it is always, I'm a big fan of giving away stuff. Obviously in education, that's a thing. So whenever I can have opportunities to give it away, your partnership idea is a great one. And I've had companies come and ask me to do a webinar or a talk or something online virtually. And of course, those companies will usually say, we don't have any money. Can you just do it for free? And I'm like, well, how about this? How about you buy 50 books and you give them
that's what we do.
Yeah, give it to the listeners. I love that. Yeah. And that's awesome because to me, it's like they walk away with something. I get a little something for it. But it's like a win-win for everybody concerned. And the company doesn't spend necessarily a lot of money on it, but it's a way to get them to, and again, it keeps spreading the message. So it's, I've had a lot, ClassLink has done this for me a couple of times, Book Creator, Mike Wakelet over the summer, they just gave away some extra ones on Twitter like a week ago. So those types of partnerships, I'm starting to figure that out. I did not admittedly do that with my first 6 books very much. I didn't know what I was doing really.
You're making me feel better. No, it's a big learning curve when it's not like doing PR. It's a little different. I mean, you do PR for a book, but you also, it's grassroots sales and figuring out the strategy. So, but that's been helpful. Yeah. Whenever someone approaches us about a webinar, sure, it's 50 books minimum. And so we're doing the right stuff. Yes. Check. Okay. So I would love to talk to you guys. Well, first, Carl, will you just share the story out of your book about the recipe, creating the recipe just for our listeners?
Yeah. So this actually was a key moment in my educational career. When I was 12 years old, I got the homework assignment that was the typical homework assignment. Go home and make a recipe over something at home. It could be like some kids did a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was like, you know, pick out the bread, put on the peanut butter, make a sandwich, which by the way, would not be a great recipe because you forgot to actually spread it, put the jelly on it, you know, all that stuff. You have to go step by step. And so me being fairly innovative at the time as a 12-year-old thinking, I'll just think outside the box here. And my parents always encouraged me to do that. And they had one of those old Panasonic Beastly VHS over the shoulder recorders that weighed about 40 pounds. And my dad's like, hey, we'll record you if you want to just do it that way. And I was like, yeah, let's try it. So I recorded this particular recipe about this giant, massive, like cookie brownie thing that had like butter and sugar and chocolate and everything else in it you could think of. I threw it on this pan and stuck it in the oven, burned my hand when I was actually taking on the actual recording. You can see me taking it out with one glove, but it was too heavy. And I had to grab it with my other hand and burned. And I still have the scar like 30 years later on my hand, which is weird. Most of it's gone by now. And so I do it. I record it. We messed up a few times. I re-recorded it because back then, you know, there wasn't editing software. The editing software was rewind. Let's re-record the whole thing from scratch. And so I don't know how many eggs and sticks of butter I went through, but we ate a lot of the mistakes. If you've ever seen me in person, you can tell I've eaten a lot of those mistakes. But what was interesting was the next day comes and we go to school and everyone turns in their recipe cards and I turn in this VCR tape. And she's like, okay, what is this? And I was like, you know, I recorded it all. And she's like, all right. So we go, she's a little frustrated, but she goes and asks the librarian to bring that one, the one TV VCR combo that we have in the entire school. You remember that in the 1980s? And we'd wheel it down the hallway and they brought it into the classroom, plugged it in, put in my tape, got to watch this little 3-minute, 4-minute thing of me cooking. And the class went crazy. The kids were laughing. They were, you know, I had a weird accent. I had a funny hat on and it just, they cheered. And I was sitting there like bowing. I was like, oh my God, this is like my shiny moment. And then I got my grade and turned out it was the first F I'd ever received in school in my life. And I asked why, I was in tears. Honestly, I broke down. I had never had an F in my life. I was a straight A kid up to that point in my life. And I asked the teacher why, and she said, you didn't follow directions. It floored me. And at that moment, honestly, that stuck with me. I'm always motivated by negative things sometimes. Like if I had a bad leader, I'm like, I want to be different than that leader. So for me, that was like, I don't want that to ever happen to a kid. I want a kid to always have the opportunity what's most important? Is it about following directions or is it about showing your understanding of a topic and demonstrating your learning? And in that case, she decided it was more important to follow directions, which I think it is important somewhat to follow directions, but not to the detriment of learning. Because to be honest, I still remember that recipe. Like I memorized it. If I had just gone home and did the recipe card and turned it in, I would never have an idea. I know it because I did it so many times. I had to practice so many times. So that was the story. And I actually have in the book a link to the actual video that my sister somehow found somewhere and digitized put on YouTube. So it's out there as me as a 12-year-old trying to make this a crazy cookie. But flash forward to just as a career as a director of innovation in a school district. And I'm walking through the halls and it's almost like it slapped me right in the face. This moment happened again, but it was different. A teacher was a Latin teacher at our high school here at Westlake Austin. And she had had her students do a report about a Roman bathhouse in Latin. And every kid did their PowerPoint like they were told. Well, one kid decided to come in and he had a recording on Minecraft where he had recreated a Roman bathhouse in Minecraft, spent 20 hours building this thing over the weekend, recorded his voice in Latin, doing directions, every little part of it, and played it for the kids. And I was like, oh my, it's like, I get goosebumps telling this story because it reminded me of, I was that same kid. And the kids clapped and it was crazy. And this difference was this teacher gave him an A and said, that was above and beyond. That's amazing. That's masterful. And he did it in a platform that he loved and enjoyed. And then a few years later, when he graduated, I told him, I've shared that story a few times. And he goes like, I said, do you remember any of that? And he goes, I remember every bit of that. He goes, I spent hours working, probably too many hours, but building that in Minecraft. Yeah. I mean, that's what's important is like, how do we remember those experiences? And if school is just about checking boxes, then forget it, which is also kind of why I wrote the book.
I love that story. Thank you for sharing it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin, what do you think? And Katie, chime in here. I want you asking questions too. You get in on this juice. Come on, Katie.
Come on, Katie.
Well, I just love listening because today is so interesting that this is our conversation tonight. Today, I spent the morning with a bunch of aspiring superintendents, and it was interesting to hear what the seasoned superintendents were sharing as advice. So I was telling this one gentleman who's been an amazing mentor to me. He was just talking naturally. He has this list of things everyone needs to know. And I was like, let's write a book. I'll help you write a book because he needs to write that down. But anyway, so I find this all very fascinating. It's very timely. But then furthermore, the consistent piece of advice about what they were giving to aspiring superintendents was to fail. Like you are going to fail, like, or you're going to not know the answers and you're going to have to be okay with that. And so this is just it's like the theme of my day.
That's interesting. Oh, go ahead. Were you going to say something, Carl?
Oh, I was going to say, I always ask this question of audiences now. I was like, how many, raise your hand if you've ever failed in your life. And everybody raises their hand. But if I say, how many of you are failures? Nobody does. Although one time at one event, someone did raise their hand. I was like, oh, sorry.
Oh, dear. Get that person some help.
Yeah, I was like, come here. Come over here. Come up and let's talk. And I think it's interesting how it's just a quick turn of a phrase. You can adjust that and be like, we've all failed. I mean, I fail every day. I mean, my wife reminds me, but like Kevin, I'm married to an editor, but in a different way. So I think that's an important message. It has to start with leadership. And I think one of the messages at the end of my book says that students won't take risks unless teachers take risks. And then I flip that on its head and say, teachers won't take risks unless leaders take risks. So if those leaders are afraid to do it, no teacher's going to try it. And if the teachers aren't going to try it, the students are going to like stay in their lane and just make sure they're doing everything to get the A, not really about learning or innovating. So that's a big message too in the book.
Yeah, I love that, Katie. So what do you guys think is the key to successful thought leadership? What companies are doing it well? What do you like to see? And tell us some stories. We want to hear about this.
This is our like core thesis statement of the podcast. It's like, we have to know this. Yeah. We have come to a conclusion at the end of the season.
The secret sauce.
Yeah. I'll start. I mean, the one thing I've done more than 100 interviews since the beginning of the pandemic with CEOs of edtech companies. And one of the big changes I've noticed, and hopefully it will stick around. That's what I keep doing. I keep taking notes. It's like, okay, what do I want to go away forever now that, you know, COVID is over? And what do we want to kind of keep stick around? And I think the authenticity of conversation that started with these Zoom calls, right? I mean, 3 years ago, we've had this technology on our computers for 10 years, right? I mean, in the ed tech space, I've been writing about the potential of it for 15 years. And teachers are like, nah, I'm not going to do it, not going to do it. We all had to do it. Everyone had to do it. Ed tech CEOs had to do it. And the only way they could talk about their companies and get their messaging out is by doing a Zoom with me, right? But in that, they were doing it from their office at their home. And I won't name names, but it was a pretty big time CEO and somebody was hammering in the background. Now, of course, they're probably adding on like, you know, a 15 room addition maybe to the house. But nevertheless, they still had construction workers in the house and things were making noise. And he's like, oh, can you hold on a second? And then he like, you know, I never got the tie on the top and the shorts on the bottom sort of thing. Or no toddlers came running in or cats across the keyboard. But everyone just got really authentic. I mean, they were just their real selves in all these conversations because the conversations were also completely mind-blowing, right? I mean, my first interviews were in April and May of 2020, and they all began before we recorded, but like, are you okay? How are you? You know, like, you have this together. And then my first questions were always, where were you on Friday the 13th, right? So, and they gave very personal anecdotes, and really no one escaped this trauma, right? And there are a couple that were some really terrible traumas. There are other ones where, like, we got stuck in Aruba for 10 days, you know, that didn't really make me feel that bad for them.
Sounds awful.
But yeah, that's a long way around of saying that I think for exhibiting thought leadership, authenticity is going to be key. You're not going to be able to put your PR team in front of you. I will not take a list of scripted questions, suggestion for any conversation I have. I mean, you could take them, but I'm not going to use them. I mean, I'm going to have a conversation.
People try to give you that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, imagine that, Sarah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah, I did. Yes. Okay.
You are, you calling me out, Carl? No.
Are you calling me out? Listen, it's good to have a guide, a North Star. This is
my show.
Open
it. It's okay.
That.
I'm sure Hogan just opened it too. If he's like me, you want to keep it conversational. So yeah. No,
all right. I will say this. No, I mean, I saw what the script that you sent is not a script, but as a milestone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I'll be like, look, we're going to talk about your news, but then we're going to talk about this bigger trend. And to begin it, we're going to talk about, you know, you as a person. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
To humanize it.
That's
so as a leader, you don't have to say you have failed or you're a failure, but you know, you just have to be real, right? And I think that's a hugely important aspect that may not have been in place before. I mean, I think the tech space is better than a lot of other verticals when it comes to that, but there were still a lot of like people trying to protect images. And, you know, unfortunately, some people are just not made for having conversations. But again, this technology takes away a lot of those things that used to make people nervous, right?
Yeah.
Bright lights. Oh, I sweat under the lights. You know, I have all these sort of issues. The Zoom kind of hides a lot of those imperfections. And we have no choice, right? And I think leaders have no choice except to be authentic.
I will add a note to that. Don't, if you're a PR person or a marketing person working for a company, I've never shared proposed questions with the reporter. That seems totally inappropriate. Do not do that. That's my recommendation.
But they do.
Yeah, I say there are companies that do, Kevin knows, and I know there are companies that want to know what you're going to say before you say it.
Okay, if you ask that question, you've seriously never worked in journalism ever,
right?
And that's totally offensive to a reporter.
I mean, as a podcast host, my most favorite response is, "Oh my God, that's a good question. Let me think about it." Like when I stump the guest. That gets me. I'm like, ooh, okay. Like, I don't want them necessarily to sweat, but I mean, that tells me that I'm asking the right question. It's not a layup, in other words. I mean, because you do some of those too. I'm going
to
set you
this
up.
This is supposed to be a layup, by the way. This is supposed to be a softball interview.
Okay. No,
I'm trying to stop you.
That's good. I mean, we're making it harder. I mean, I see Kevin sweating now, but, and Katie's in her car, hopefully not driving. But
I am parked. I'm living the mom life.
She's running up that hill. No, that's a different song, Katie. There you go. No, but I think that is, I mean, just to piggyback on what Kevin said, I think authenticity to me is number one. And I think the failure part, that's of course the angle I take on it is, you know, tell the truth, be transparent, share your failures, but also share how do you reflect on the failures and then what do you learn from them and then how do you improve going forward? Because I think that's a big part of it. Too often times leaders, and especially with social media today and politics and everything around that, they're afraid to say like, here's where I messed up. But if you say like, hey, I messed up here and here's how we fixed it, here's how we acknowledged it and here's what we're doing going forward. Most of your audience, not all of them, admittedly, some of the parents will still get mad at you, but that shouldn't be a reason not to try something. And I think what ends up happening is in a world where we're feeling the pressure not to take risks, it's pushing us towards conservatism in terms of our ideologies. And so now we're like, well, we're going to stick with this one formula that everyone knows and it really works. I talk about that in the book too with, what's his face, the guy, the CEO of Pixar who talked, Ed Catmull, who does a great book, by the way, Creativity Inc. is a great book. And he talks about this, like you make a great movie like Toy Story, then there's a lot of pressure that the next thing you do better be like Toy Story 2 and just don't ever change the formula because if you do, you could really mess up. So there's a pressure towards conservatism because you've been successful. So I think in schools where they've had successes, you'll see that happen a lot where they're just kind of like, okay, we're going to stay in our lane and not try new things versus schools that maybe have to blow stuff up and try new things. Maybe they get to be a little more innovative that way. Unfortunately, that's not always the case in public education because what ends up happening is those lower econ schools get, oh, now here's a scripted system that every kid must be on for 22 minutes or whatever. And it shouldn't be that way, but I think in some cases it is. So a long way to answer your original question, which is, yeah, I agree with Kevin. It's it's authenticity for me. That tells me thought leadership. And I'll add one more thing. It's not necessarily about a title. There are people that are great thought leaders that don't have CEO as their title or don't have director or superintendent. That does make a difference usually. And people will listen with more sway when they hear a title. But I mean, stuff coming out of the classroom has been amazing to me. I've seen students say stuff that has blown my socks off. So it can come from all sorts of areas.
Yeah, I guess one thing I failed to mention, the other work I'm doing with eSchool News, I've been moderating their webinar series. So there are at least four of those a month. And you know, they involve both industry, but as well as educators. And when I help put those together, I try to insist on having an educator who is a thought leader, but who might not necessarily be the superintendent. You know, actually, I mean, we're all right now in the presence of a former leader of the year for tech and learning in 2000. Was that this century or last century, Carl? I can't remember.
It's in this millennial. I've got the framed cover somewhere. Oh, it's in my desk drawer right here. No.
Yeah, right by the waste paper basket.
2014. I was just a young buck.
2014.
Man.
Okay. Yeah. Atlanta, Georgia.
Yep.
But when we did those awards, we would give an award to a superintendent as well as someone at the principal level, but as well as a teacher, and always try to emphasize to have one at each of those levels. eSchool News just finished wrapping up their eSchool News Hero Awards, and this came out of the pandemic, where we had educators write in. And it's not about how this district superintendent, you know, saved the district. It's about how the teachers got together and figured out a way to get the hotspots out to students in rural areas or, you know, various other true stories of heroism that continue to happen in schools. And hearing it from those folks is more important, I believe, than you hear from the higher ups necessarily. So, you know, it all depends on what your definition of leader is.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's what I think it is too. Authenticity. Yeah.
Something that at our service agency, this is so interesting too. We have a large geography, a lot of rural schools. And when I was kind of new to this role and trying to get out there and schools weren't letting me in, I was a stranger. And so it was interesting to your point, Kevin, of like Zoom's been here a long time. I had been on Zoom sometimes, but in this moment, you know, I was sending people Zoom links to chat and it was still very like uncomfortable, which is crazy to think about now and the frequency in which we click on a Zoom link. But nonetheless, you know, I would generalize that educators are ready to come to a meeting for like the objective, which obviously we need those. But these conversations that we were hosting, we came in with no script. We came in with no objective. It was genuinely like, you all are talking about curriculum today. Where that conversation goes, we will discover that together. And again, it's a little uncomfortable to some folks, like, okay, what am I supposed to do though? But I'll tell you, as that evolved over some months of just meeting, that's singularly the thing that people care about the most right now is just creating the space, and we don't know where it's going to go. So interesting that you're saying that, because again, this has been around forever. We could have been doing this for years, but we created the space.
This is the biggest forced beta test in the history of personkind, right? And we just like had these technologies, they were sitting there, and now it's like, all right, well, you've got to use them. And everybody had to use them, you know? And even that CEO was sitting in their home, didn't have the IT guy to be able to come in and help him set it up for him, right? He had to set it up. I don't know how many interviews I had where, you know, there was a good 10, 15 minutes of fumbling before it got started. And nothing humanizes a person other than not being able to find their microphone, right, Katie?
Oh, yeah. Like me. Like, I'm still using, yeah, precisely that. In my car, I promise I'm normally a little more put together, but my husband started working. He's working for an ed tech company now. And so I realized how much that I was not cut out for like single mom status. And so that's part of this right now is he could have helped me with carpool. That's not happening right now. So,
Katie, you're being your most authentic self.
That's it. You're a thought leader.
This is really me. Really me.
But there's no way I'm going to take this background off behind me to be but the true authentic self, because right behind me is our laundry room at my house.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if I tilt my camera this way, there's actually a pile of clothes and boxes over there. Yeah. And my kids' playroom is behind that door. Yeah. And they're actually back there right now making noise, which has happened several times on podcasts and webinars. No, I feel like, Kevin, yeah. I feel like there should have been a shirt at some point. I think someone did make a shirt that said, "You're still on mute," because that was also
it still happens, by the way.
It happened today when I was doing a webinar with EdSearch. I was like, you're on mute. Oh, yeah, sorry.
All the time. Well, speaking of authentic selves, two of my kids have COVID. Oh,
no.
Yeah, it's like stomach bug on top of COVID. So that's been really fun today.
No good. Ugh.
Yes, bummer. You guys, super fun. I look forward to booking our time on your shows right after we get off this call. Looking forward to that. Just let us know your schedules. And anything else you want to share with the audience of Build Momentum?
I have something. So a few months ago, I started a platform called K-12 Leaders. It is a social community. Oh, yeah. I will not call it a social media company because it is not a social media company. It is a social spot. Educators. It's a space for educators built by educators. And we're trying to keep it as spam-free as possible. Think of LinkedIn, but not with the spam and a little more educationally focused instead of business focused. So we're up to 700 and something members. We've actually signed a couple of good deals with some conferences coming up. Our hope is to continue the conversation. That's kind of our mantra. So when you go to a conference and you connect, you know, you get a little app, you pop it up. There's a QR code there. We're connecting on K-12 Leaders and we continue to move. And by the way, anyone's a leader. It doesn't mean you have to be a leader in title. Like I said, teachers are leaders. We want them in the platform too. And so, yeah, so we've had that going and it's free, obviously, for teachers and educators forever. Our idea is like, let's continue to build this community and continue the conversation. Because I hate going to a conference, downloading an app, connecting with somebody on that app. And then 2 weeks later, like, why do I even use this thing and deleting it? So keeping us going throughout all the conferences that we go to and interact with and kind of keeping those hallway conversations in a space where we can continue them after we've left the physical event. So that's the platform. Check it out, K-12 Leaders. That ad is paid for. Right? Nobody. Because it's all our own time and money. We don't make any money on it right now.
Michael's working on changing that, though. He's working on it.
Yeah, Mike Bronder is hustling his rear end off. Mm-hmm. He's trying. We're building some courses in there, some little sneak preview of things to come. You never know, Sarah, myself, who knows? Courses. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited. And there's a big conference that we just partnered with that we're going to announce in about a month. So it'll be fun.
Awesome. No, that's a big one that you got going on. I heard about it. Exciting. Okay. Well, look forward to having you both back. Thank you for joining. And
thanks for having.
Thank you.
We're excited to hear your thoughts on this new format of the podcast and to share it with all your friends and colleagues.
Absolutely.
Thanks, y'all.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
If you're looking for more of this thought leadership goodness for your organization, you're in the right place. Visit us at swpr-group.com to learn more about how we work with education organizations and their leaders, superintendents, and influencers to increase your impact. Again, that's swpr-group.com. Thanks for tuning in today, and we will see you next time on Build Momentum.